from the hallowed halls of Floodlaw, via the Golden Tower of the Fisher Building, this is Behind the Bench on News Talk 760 WJR. With your law expert, Todd Flood. Brought to you by Floodlaw. Floodlaw, when it matters. Visit floodlaw.com. Now get ready with your legal questions for one of the Great Lakes' leading attorneys by calling 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0WJR. Now here's your host, Todd Flood.
We're back. Where the time flies, I got to tell you, it's going by quick, so we need to enjoy this this wonderful summer, get out on the golf courses when we can. But for the guy that I got coming on the show right now, every time I talk to him, he's running like a madman from one meeting to another, or working with me in Flint, which we're not going to talk about tonight as far as the water investigation goes, the water crisis. But I have with me my esteemed colleague and one of the great FBI, former FBI directors here in Detroit, Andy Arena. Andy, my man, you with me?
Hey, Todd. Good evening.
Good evening, buddy. I know your time is limited, but, man, Flint has another issue, and I just saw, just so you know, it hot off the press tonight, Judge Goldsmith is ordering a stay on the removal of Iraqis, citizens or non-citizens with status that have committed crimes or have been convicted. Right now, he's putting it on a hold. So we'll talk about that another time. But you know, this stabbing in Flint—it's been all over the news. The terrorist activity in the country and throughout the world has been escalating. It seems like, obviously, the airports are ripe. You've looked at this case and the scenario, and from a standpoint of a professional, someone that's been involved in many of these analyses of terrorist activity, what do you make of this? And is this something that, you know, we obviously got to be looking at 360 degrees around us all the time? What do you think about what happened up in Flint at the airport with the stabbing and this man that came in from Canada?
Well, Todd, I think it's kind of the new normal. I think this is really the new face of terrorism. If you go back to, you know, around 9/11, 2001, you know, groups like Al-Qaeda were just fixated on these spectacular grand attacks. And they never really thought about these smaller attacks like this. And over time, these groups, you know, Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula up to ISIS today, they've evolved in how they operate, how they radicalize, and how they get their message out there. And they're really adept at using social media. You know, I'm really interested to see over the next couple of days what comes out on this guy. You know, what was he looking at? What was he contemplating? And a lot of it's going to come off his internet activity. But, you know, it's almost like a death by a thousand cuts as opposed to the old grand spectacular attack. So, you know, ISIS, they say, hey, listen, you know, grab a knife, grab a gun, get a car, get a truck, whatever you've got, and wreak havoc out there. And you know, unfortunately, there's a lot of people around the world that grasp that and do it.
What, you know, as far as if you know, the recruiting and the brainwashing of people that, I mean, you don't come out of the womb necessarily with this DNA tied up. I mean, obviously, it's a serious amount of brainwashing, training, and the like. But, you know, how do they get someone to be in the group ISIS? How do they recruit, and how does that all happen? And what should citizens be on the lookout for?
Well, that's really one of the great evolutions, I think, in terrorism. You know, a group like Al-Qaeda, they would go out and look for people, recruit them, bring them there, radicalize them, operationalize them, train them at these camps in Afghanistan, and send them out to you know, either fight on a battlefield or go back and do a terrorist attack. And you know, this constant drumbeat that ISIS puts out there, they're really adept at using social media. You know, it's just this constant message out there. And there's a lot of people out there, disenfranchised folks, maybe mentally ill. You know, they're just looking for something to grasp, something, somewhere where they can belong.
Right.
ISIS is there with their arms wide open. And so, you know, if they can get people to just go out and do things like this, that's a win for them.
It's a crazy world and a crazy norm for which we have to live in. I don't know, you know, as far as the security of airports, you and I have been in Flint. We've been through that airport. You know, what are the signs that the federal government and the FBI and the like, is it just so voluminous that of people trying to get in or trying to create these terrorist acts, it's sometimes more difficult than not to be able to spot them ahead of time?
Well, a lot of these folks, they're already here, or they're already in Belgium, or they're already in France.
Right.
And they entered, like this guy entered legally. Some of these folks are citizens. They've been here, maybe they were born here. And, you know, they get radicalized online and go out and do these things. And there's no, like, back and forth, Todd. So there's no really communication back and forth between ISIS and this person. You know, it's just a constant drumbeat, and, you know, it beats into your head, and you go out and do it. And that makes it much more difficult for the intelligence community to follow these guys because they're really kind of off the grid.
Right.
You know, a lot of times the loners, they're not going to the mosque. They're not, you know, associating with friends or family. And I think that's really what makes these lone wolf types so difficult to defend against.
Wow. Well, I know you are tied up in a meeting tonight, and I appreciate everything you do. You know that. You got my back, I got yours, and you're one of the best. And I thank you for calling in tonight, and I thank you for being the leader of our team. So,
hey, listen, my friend, anytime. You know that.
All right, buddy. Well,
okay.
I'll talk to you soon. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. So, you know, I don't know, and I'd love to hear from whoever wants to call in, 1-800-859-0WJR, 1-800-859-0957. Call in with your questions. There you go. I mean, Andy Arena here in Detroit handled the underwear bomber, first terrorist activity here in Detroit in the country, the first trial. He's been involved, and there you have it. It's the drumbeat, the constant people that are trying to get into an organization or stay within some acceptance of something, and the radicalization of this this activity, just mind-boggling. I know Andy, unfortunately, had a meeting tonight. We're going to have a special guest with us tonight, someone that's been behind the scenes and someone in our city, Roop Raj, who is going to come on with us tonight, has been covering news left, right, and center. Obviously, that's his business. He's going to be with us at the half hour and talk about what he sees in the proliferation and as this constant drumbeat and what the coverage, does it help, does it hurt? What is it that we need to do, and what role does the media have in maybe not playing it as much, or do we play it more to show and keep vigilance? I don't know. These are all great questions, and Roop is going to be on with us at the half hour. We got other breaking news I do want to get into, and we're going to try to get one of our immigration lawyers on the line to deal with what Judge Goldsmith did and staying the government's petition to remove foreigners that have committed acts specifically in our area, the Iraqi individuals. So we'll be back with Behind the Bench just after this.
You're listening to Behind the Bench, radio's most comprehensive legal forum, where you ask the questions and Todd Flood provides informal counsel. Submit your legal questions at 800-859-0WJR. And get to know Todd Flood at floodlaw.com. Now, here's Todd Flood.
We're back. So, off the press just came with us. We have a decision that was just made by Judge Goldsmith, or just released just recently. And if you have questions, please call in 1-800-859-0WJR or 1-800-859-0957. So, basically, due process is taking place. The government asking for, you know, Iraqi nationals, including, obviously, this was filed on behalf of petitioner Rebecca Aducci, and any other people that were arrested, to be deported. And basically here, and I'm just reading through it as fast as I can, there's a lot of things that obviously, you know, if these people go back, they face potential death penalty issues, torture, all of the like. But the question was whether or not there was jurisdiction on behalf of the class, and whether or not the federal courts had jurisdiction. And based on a very comprehensive analysis and order by the court, Judge Goldsmith, a very learned judge, basically put a stay and on the removal of the class, the petitioners, the Iraqis, and is going to hear and have a hearing that deals with whether or not there is jurisdiction and whether or not they have the grounds to stay here in the United States. So fascinating, and it comes at a time where, you know, so many different things going on in the world with regards to, obviously, the terrorist activity and the deportation of people and the like. So hot topic. Call in, feel free to call in, 1-800-859-0WJR. We have with us tonight one of, I think, Detroit's coming on to us tonight at the half hour, one of the best upcoming reporters, if I shouldn't say upcoming, he is one of the best reporters in the area, and so well-read, and is very versed in so many different fields and topics. Roop Raj is going to be joining us to talk about the consistent drumbeat that's going on out there and the Flint crisis as it relates to just this this issue with the terrorist activity. We also have a couple police officers that are going to be calling in. So I do see there is someone calling in tonight, and I take all calls tonight, but calling in on a question, I'm not sure. I think it's Todd. Todd, you with me?
Yes.
Todd, hey, thanks for listening. What say you?
Hey, how are you? Sorry it's pouring rain in the car. I just had a quick question for you.
Well, I hope I can answer it. I'm not sure. Bring it on.
Sure. Listen, I didn't want to move twice, and I needed a house kind of quickly, and I came across a house for sale by owner after my house sold. I had one that fell through under contract, and I was just wondering if I had any case on the fact that the lady, you know, it was for sale by owner, and she said that, you know, when my wife and I talked to her the first time we walked through the house, she said, you know what, you won't find anything wrong. In fact, she even gave us a simple example, like the only thing you're going to find wrong in this house is the GFI above the sink is out because we never use it because the plug was too close to the sink. You know what? My mistake was I trusted her. We've been in the house for a couple days now, and 85% of the 29 windows are rotted out, and they won't open or close. And I know it's, hey, life goes on. I'm, you know, I may not be the brightest guy in the world in the fact that I trusted this lady, but I was just wondering, you know, I just came, turned on WJR, and I heard you were on, and I just thought I'd give you a ring.
Well, you know, we're actually on to talking about some other issues, but I will have and get your number and get you to a real estate lawyer, a land contract. You know, if there was no conditions or anything that warranted or guaranteed the condition of the house. You know, you have to go through, obviously, the land contract and see if there was anything that gives you an escape clause, basically, to get out of the sale of the home. But I will make sure that we get your number down and get you over to a real estate attorney. And
okay, my apologies. I didn't know you were talking about something else.
No, no worries. And thank you so much for listening and calling in.
Thanks,
yep, thank you. So, you know, obviously we take all calls that deal with legal issues, and I thank everybody for listening as the show grows. One of the issues today, though, it clearly is the safety that deals with the terrorist activity that just took place up in Flint at the airport, the security at airports and the like. And I understand that, you know, it used to be so simple, used to be so easy. And now, as Andy Arena just placed it, it's kind of the new norm. So I see we have Rook back on the line coming in. Yep. So one of the great heroes in the city of Detroit and on the air, someone that I admire immensely, who gets it right. Rook, you with me, bud?
I am, and it's so kind of you to say that. How are you today, Todd?
I'm well, my friend. How are you doing?
We're doing well. You know, I'm just filling in for Jewel Perkins, who's off this week. And so just filling in at 5, 6, 10, and 11. And we're talking about what everybody is talking about. The whole world's talking about what you're talking about.
Yeah. You know, you see today the media covering hard the issue of the man that came over from Canada. Earlier, before you came on, we had an expert and one of my the lead investigator in our Flint water crisis, Andy Arena, came on and started talking about it. Something, you know, he strikes a chord with is that this is kind of the new norm, and the individualized person that comes into the fold. It used to go into training over wherever the ISIS camps were, but now, you know, the social media and the like impregnate the minds of those who can be influenced. What do you see? I mean, as far as in the media today, it seems to be all over the place.
I agree, Todd. I think you're right. I think that, you know, before when you heard the words terror network, you thought of, even if so, a rudimentary organization somewhere overseas that was through guerrilla tactics, training people on how to do the army crawl and do, you know, the ridiculous stunts that we used to see on the video of Al-Qaeda and those training camps. And sometimes those did seem rather rudimentary. But what was scary, I think, to most Americans is the fact that there were people getting together for one common goal, which was to hurt Americans. And we knew that was happening. But as you just so astutely pointed out, and as Andy Arena has known and probably knows more than he's even able to say, the intelligence that he has, is these guys and gals are sitting here on U.S. soil. And what makes it so terrifying, even if the person's in Montreal, you know, somewhere in North America, there's people plotting something like this at any given time. And as you say, not only with the dark web, which is very misunderstood by a lot of people, it's not the internet that you and I use. And there's places and hiding spots that aren't physical places anymore where people can actually go and continue to foster that hate that fuels an attack like we saw in Flint. And we see it happening all the time on social media. So in a sense, it's good that there's somewhat of a digital footprint in many cases of these guys that you see online. But in many cases, it's even more frightening because they're so easily radicalized by an ideology that they don't have to be on the fertile ground of somewhere in the Middle East, but rather right here in the U.S.
Yeah, and the scary part about it is the people have such immediate, quick access. And it begs the legal question that comes up to, you know, our Fourth Amendment issues and whether or not the searches and seizures and the, you know, how evasive the government can be. But when you balance it against the safety of others and the human factor of loss of life or who's on the dark web and who is getting radicalized or falling into the cult almost like thinking, There becomes a place, potentially, but you don't want to erode away that of, you know, your protections of the Fourth Amendment. And it's such a complicated balancing act that when you see acts like this, you're unnerved. I got to believe that this, you know, look at what just happened in Washington, D.C. And this man that went at the Republicans. Now, not a terrorist per se, terrorist act, no question about it,
right.
A radical act.
Sure.
But the media, the social media, the footprints for which he had, where do you draw the line? You know, it's,
well, I think the curse could be a blessing, Todd. The curse is the fact that you have people who have a resting place to foster these types of dialogues and these types of narratives. But the blessing in that is the fact that we can actually track it and see it. Now, the question is, you know, how sophisticated are we in tracking it? Well, I think pretty sophisticated, it seems.
Sure.
How sophisticated are we in being able to reconcile, as you say, the Fourth Amendment, freedom of expression, but also kind of couple that with how long do I watch this person before I do something to say, look, what you're doing could be illegal based on the threats that you're making or based on the type of sentiment you have, we'd like to talk to you. You know, at what point, and even if you're not prosecuted for having thoughts like that, because that clearly violates the Fourth Amendment, to have a thought is to have a thought. But perhaps that means, does that mean that you start surveilling the person heavier because you know that they do have and espouse types of thoughts and values that could actually end up turning into a violent act?
Absolutely.
Those are questions you got to ask.
Right. And so I think as you go down the continuum, to what degree do you start to pull the trigger as far as the surveillance and the watching? And you're absolutely correct. The technology and the analysts that come into the federal government and the people that I've worked with within the federal government and the state government, I must tell you, I've worked closely with the Oakland County Sheriff's Department, and they have one of the best, if not the best, I think, in the counties of their surveillance and the ability to monitor and get digital footprints, I should say, from computer ESI discovery.
My question is this. If you find out that your neighbor, if you find out that your neighbor is being interviewed by an Oakland County Sheriff's deputy because they are not only just Googling, but actually on, you know, Googling something like, you know, how do you go about doing something awful to somebody? How to develop some kind of a system of a bomb or some kind of a physical threat. If someone is actually Googling that, and then you look at their social media and the feds or whoever they're able to look at and surveil their social media and say things like, this person must die. I mean, if those words are uttered, at what point do we just say, okay, look, this isn't just nuance. This is a capable human being who could really do some harm. And that's just, I mean, for you as an attorney, where do you, I guess my question to you, I'm curious to know what you think, where is that line and how soft is that line?
Well, it's a great question. So the duties, what do people have as relates to duties? A citizen doesn't have a legal necessary duty unless they take it on or they put themselves in a position of authority to take on,
right.
You know, they're deputized or whatever. But your next door neighbor, obviously the vigilance is the moral compass, right? And not the legal
right.
compass. And, you know, drawing the line. So, and reporting and talking to the authorities, that's where it comes into play. Now, when you start getting solicitations or you start, you know, doing the overt acts of actually buying equipment, but maybe don't have
right.
all of the equipment. Maybe you just have part of the equipment that they show you how to make certain things or do terrorist acts. And you start getting to the position where you're doing those overt acts, then you start to breach and get into a federal violation, a statute that you may violate, which is an arrestable offense. That's, you know, how far down the continuum. Here, obviously, this man tried to, the Flint terrorist tried to buy a gun when he was coming over into Canada. He was denied that, but where were the red flags, right? What
sure.
happened? How come the monitoring system didn't pick up this particular person And you know what? I venture to say, knowing law enforcement and knowing the great, you know, I know some great, great investigators and analysts and FBI agents and Detroit police and local police departments, that we probably don't know how many acts are stopped. I'm sure of it. We don't know how many acts are prevented. But it's sure. These that slip through the cracks that just kind of rattle you to the bone a little bit or to the core, because, you know, what's next? Is it the rampage at a school? What's next? You know, and you get these radicalized people that have been brainwashed or whatever the case may be, put into these situations. What role does the media play? I mean, where do you see the media? It's great to have the coverage. It's great to get the awareness. But, you know, I just have this eerie feeling that someone in the background is thumping their chest saying, yes, it's out there. We get to cover it. There's a martyr, you know. So is there any complications or lines that the media draws in some of this activity?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, when you're covering something like this, the public has an insatiable appetite to understand not just what happened, but how it happened.
Right.
And ultimately, as storytellers and as journalists, you know, we're coupled up in your industry, too. You know, we're, the attorneys and media folks, we're often painted with a broad brush because there's some bad apples out there. And because of that, they think everybody is this sensationalist guy who just can't wait for the next big ratings point to hit. You know, I'm not a business guy. I'm a journalist. I don't run the numbers. I don't look at Nielsen every night. I don't know what our numbers were last night. What I do know is that there's a critical story that has far-reaching implications and an impact on communities all over Metro Detroit and all over the country that not only needs to be covered, but also needs to be understood. And
right.
I think, for instance, yesterday when we interviewed Osama Sabwani, who is a Muslim American, and he was able to come out on television and have a discourse with our Taryn Asher back and forth, in which he was able to say, this is not part of the faith that I follow.
Right.
And I don't know why this guy was yelling, God is great, before attacking someone, when that's a prayer that he says every day, Sabwani does. So the question then becomes, what responsibility does the media have? I think it's to really understand the story, but then tell it with all of the voices involved that are needed to be heard. And that's a critical, critical statement that I say. You have to have all of the people at a table. You know, I would not have a discussion with talking about your child's education unless I had all the teachers and all the parents sitting in a room. Similarly, all of the parties that could be affected by whatever just happened need to be sitting at the table. And it's up to us as media members to put that table and assemble that panel together. And that's what we do each and every day. And I think that's critical to give context and to give voice to those who don't understand how this happened.
Absolutely. And Rip, you are truly one of the best here. If you could stay with us, we got a few callers that want to ask some questions. And your thoughts and your brain power is something to be admired by. Obviously me, I'm a fan, but I wish we had the other media folk that followed those same precepts and concepts. So we'll be right back with Behind the Bench and Rup Raj right after this.
If you're seeking counsel, get to know Flood Law's Todd Flood. Call the office during business hours at 248-547-1032 or visit floodlaw.com. This is Behind the Bench on News Talk 760 WJR. And now, here's Todd Flood.
We're back. We have with us two people. Rup Raj, who I think if anyone ever got to sit down with him and talk with him and hear him and his philosophy with regards to being a journalist, he belongs in the national spotlight. We're blessed to have him here in the city of Detroit working with us. He is balanced, true, honest, and one of those reporters that when you shake his hand, you can bank on his word. And we have also with us, joining us tonight, the police chief of Northville Township. He retired from Canton PD, one of my favorite places for detectives and how they crack down on crime. One of the best bureaus, I think, in our Wayne County area is Canton PD, Livonia. But now we have Chief Todd Mulcher from Northville Township. Chief, are you with us?
I am. Good evening, Todd.
Good evening. Roop, you here? Did we make this work?
No, absolutely. It's good to be with you, and thank you for your kind words. It's good to be with you today.
Thanks. Thank you. Thanks for being both of you. So, Chief, we've been talking, and I'll go to you a little bit on this. We've been talking about... And we had earlier on tonight a segment with Andy Arena, and he talks about the new norm sometimes in the society we're living in, where we see acts all over the country, all over the world, that come to us. The incident that just took place in Flint, where a man that stabs a TSA agent in the neck, ultimately the police officers subdued him. Which, surprising to me, there wasn't a loss of life. There must have, obviously, they didn't fire, they didn't shoot. They took the terrorist down without having to use deadly force. But how different is the world for which you in law enforcement, Chief, have been doing this for well over 20 years? How different is the world that you work in now in law enforcement when you hear and see these things?
Well, I think you make a really good point, Todd, and the world of law enforcement has changed significantly over the last several years. We used to hear about these type of international and to some degree national incidents occurring in larger communities. And now, and really on the heels of what just occurred in Flint, it's very real locally for us. And so all the talk about this coming has really become a reality. And so state, local, county law enforcement has to adjust their mission to accommodate for the changing reality.
I gotta believe. Is there a and Roop, you've covered this material. Chief, is there a different? I just had a friend that is leaving the Michigan State Police for 2 months to go down to Quantico for some training with the FBI. Is there new diligence or training that's being implemented within the local agencies? Is there? Yeah. Things that you're doing to be more proactive in protecting against these types of things?
So that's really the start point for the networking between federal, state, local law enforcement. The FBI has been in the driver's seat with their National Academy all the way back to like 1935. And the value in that program, they put 200 plus people through 4 times a year, chiefs, law enforcement administrators from around the world, and have heavy emphasis on this type of topic, so that it's bringing the information sharing together, and people like Andy Arena, who then facilitate that locally, and Dave Gelios, who facilitate that locally, is really positioning us for success in the future, but we still need to have a deeper reach into our local communities, because this just is not a law enforcement problem. It is everybody's problem.
Right. And Roop, you touched on a topic where the integrity of journalism and the integrity of, I think, law enforcement comes into play, of knowing all sides, where, the man before the act screaming, "God is greater," going into the beginning of what Muslims say prior to a prayer, that doesn't speak for the Muslim community. That doesn't speak for the people that follow the religion of being Muslim. But yet people want to stereotype or, obviously put everyone into a box of, well, this is over here.
Well, it's an interesting perspective. I mean, I think, you know, I'm a Hindu American. My wife is Catholic. And we, just like everybody else, are terrified at what happened. But we sit back and we watch and wonder how someone could, how the entire group can be perceived given the fact that this happened. We have to take heed in the fact that, you know, your neighbors, your people around you, they're people of all different cultures and faiths, and we have to understand that this which happened is not something that's followed by everybody of any faith. But, you know, the bottom line for us is that, you know, you mentioned trust, you know, to trust your neighbors and to trust law enforcement and to trust the stories that you're hearing on the news or that you're reading, know where you're getting your information and get the information right from the source. You know, if you're hearing the news and you're watching a television newscast or reading the paper or looking at something on the internet, you know, be careful, because on Facebook, for instance, there's such, it's completely, it's awful. I mean, it's misinformation that's on there, because there's so many organizations that appear like news organizations, but they're not. And so they, you know, something.com, truth.com, you know, this is not, these aren't journalists who are going out to get a story. These are propaganda artists who are putting together information pieces to make it look a certain way to influence thoughts. So yeah, certainly on social media, but back to social media, I think the one thing that people at home can do is be vigilant. You know, if you know of a neighbor who's stockpiling something or seemingly, you know, if you see someone driving in a U-Haul with loads of fertilizer in the back of the truck and they're
right.
unloading it, I hope that someone would call the good chief who's on the phone and say, hey, chief, look, I don't know what to make of this, but I think I should call. And I think, chief, you'd probably say, I'm glad you did.
Yeah, chief, yeah. I mean, that's exactly what you're looking for, I got to believe, is the vigilance of society and good Samaritans around us.
Absolutely, we would. And we would treat that information very delicately and value it. And the individuals calling to give us that information can trust that we will get it to the proper authorities who will then be able to look into it further.
Right, right. You know, we were talking about, that is important, Roop, you're absolutely right. And Chief, we were talking about, you know, the continuum, what down the line of when is it that it crosses the line and when is it, you know, the time necessary to call the authorities. And obviously, I got to believe there's analysts within all law enforcement organizations that have the ability to look into suspects and their social media and what they're planning or the dark web. Is the Northville Township Police Department, you know, I got to believe that you use those tools to help you ferret out crime on lower levels all the way up potentially to the higher levels.
We do have a computer crime specialist. We also recently created a position for a crime data analyst who is busy networking with crime data analysts regionally, locally, federally, for this very reason.
Good.
But one of the points that you just brought out about sharing that information, it is critical. I mean, I just can't emphasize enough how critical it is that information gets shared. Individuals, one of the things that's been true in law enforcement for years, police officers will go to a residence to take a breaking and entering report, and inevitably we find there was a neighbor who was home and watched this and somehow minimized what was occurring because they didn't believe that it was a crime occurring right next to them.
Right.
So we'd get a call and find out after the fact that they watched this. But if people take that information, even though they may think it means nothing, understand that they will not be in trouble, that it's okay to share the information, that people will take that, treat it with the value that it holds, and use it appropriately.
Chief, thank you.
I think the chief out there, he and his guys and his men and women on the force are far smarter than I am to understand that there are pieces that sometimes can be put together. So if I see something, it may just be that I think I'm looking at that one thing in a vacuum, but the chief and his folks may actually look at it and say, wait a minute, this actually fits into a bigger picture. So that's what I think makes it so critical.
That is absolutely true. The circumstances of how they see it through their prism, they're trained. You know what, gentlemen, I thank you so much. Chief, thank you so much for coming on tonight and last minute. And Roop, as always, my friend, God bless you. You're the best in the biz. And, you know, someday you got to remember, you know, that the short guys like me, I know you're going to this. I know you're going to this to the big star someday of national stuff because you're so good.
To, I appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Chief.
Thank you very much. Yep. Have a good evening.
Thank you. So there you have it, folks. I mean, you heard it from some of the best from all different perspectives. And we'll be back with Behind the Bench next time with all the new topics that are coming at us. Till then.